The following sermon was recorded during a weekly Sunday morning service at the First Unitarian Congregation of Ottawa. For more information about our congregation or to make a donation, please visit us online at www.firstunitarianottawa.ca.
How to be happy. Let me start by saying that for better and sometimes also for worse, a lot of us here give the impression of being that way. I'm told that a common experience in this congregation is that people who are going through tough times, deaths, divorces, confusion, strife, sheer bodily deterioration, loneliness, different sorts of trouble. Some people that have been going through this tell me that they find it difficult to come here and sit among people who seem so normal, so happy, so la-la-la and carefree. And that disappoints me. Normal, happy, tra-la-la-la-la, and carefree. That's not really me, and that's probably not really you. In the words of Rumi, let this be a place for wanderers, worshippers, lovers of leaving, folk who have broken their vows 1,000 times before. And I suppose there's room enough for the disappointed as well. And I wish it were easier for all of us to come and acknowledge that sometimes it is hard being who we are. At the same time, neither do I want us to be that caravan of despair. So how to be happy? Nasruddin, the Islamic holy trickster of many stories, has one story in which he literally steals happiness. He meets a dejected man on the side of the road and asks what the trouble is. There is nothing of interest in my life, my brother, says the man. I worked a long time. Now I have enough money. I've put it all in this knapsack to travel the world and find things that are interesting and entertaining. But so far, nothing. Without another word, Nasruddin seizes the traveler's knapsack and makes off down the road running like a rabbit. Because he knows the road, he knows the switchbacks and so forth, so he gets well ahead of the man that he has robbed, puts the knapsack in the road, and waits behind a bush to see what happens. The miserable man, huffing and puffing, running down the tortuous road because of his loss, looking everywhere, comes upon the knapsack, sees that it is all still intact, and shouts for joy. There ought to be a better way of bringing happiness to a sad man, thinks Nasruddin. The Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, is the first and largest integrated not-for-profit medical group practice in the world. It employs more than 3,800 physicians and scientists and has 50,900 allied health staff. It spends over $500 million a year on research. So, here is their collective advice on how to be happy, distilled down to 5 points. Devote time to family and friends. Appreciate what you have. maintain an optimistic outlook, feel a sense of purpose, live in the moment. These five things have scientific evidence behind them. The rest of my sermon, the commentary, not so much. But before I get into my commentary, I will tell you that also from the Mayo Clinic, only 10% or so of the variation in people's reports of happiness can be explained by differences in their circumstances. It appears that the bulk of what determines happiness is due to personality and, more importantly, thoughts and behaviors that can be changed. So, yes, you can, in fact, learn to be happier than you are now, according to the Mayo Clinic. You may have thought, as many do, that happiness comes from being born rich or beautiful or living a stress-free life. The reality is that people who have wealth, beauty, or less stress are not happier on average than those who don't enjoy those blessings. Now for the commentary. The holiday season is upon us. And one of the first of the five is devoting time to family and friends. This is a time when our feelings about families are intensified. The humorist Robert Benchley, many decades ago, said that holidays were invented by a sadistic Englishman to make everyone feel sad. Single people would feel so sad that they were single at the holiday time. Married people would feel sad that they were married at the holiday time. Everyone would get a sense of how far their lives had fallen short of their initial ambitions. I would say yes, devote time to family and friends. Remember to maintain healthy boundaries. Dare to take measured risks. I'll talk about that more under another category. In healthy families, things are always somewhat fluid. There is an openness to new possibilities. I also note that the Mayo Clinic does not say spend time with your family and friends. It says, devote time to your family and friends. It may be that what you need to do this Christmas day is to sit down and write a long letter to your mother who died 15 years ago. That would be one way of devoting time to your family. When I was in San Francisco, I used to do a lot of pre-marriage counseling because that church was used for a lot of weddings, and we didn't have chaplains there. One of the maxims of pre-marriage counseling was that marriage is a missionary effort. Every family believes that it knows the right way to celebrate Christmas or your other holiday, and so it sends out emissaries to marry others who do not yet know the right way to celebrate Christmas, so that this family can teach them. Are we surprised when conflicts ensue? Those of us who are old enough to remember when being gay was a big deal in many families can remember the wisdom of the gay community that came from the pain of many of them of being shut out of their family of origin. And many of those people talked about their biological family or their birth family and their chosen family. The chosen family were friends who were more than friends. Friends help you move. People who are more than friends help you move dead bodies. That sort of thing. It is good to have a collection of people who are friends and somehow more than friends. Happy people devote time to friends and family. Appreciate what you have. This brings us back to the tale of how Nasruddin stole happiness. Deep happiness cannot exist without slowing down to enjoy the joy, to appreciate what we have. Maintain an optimistic outlook. There is the old saying about the optimist who says that the glass is half full, the pessimist who says the glass is half empty, the realist who says that the glass is twice as big as it needs to be. Here is when I want to talk about taking risks by the spoonful. A goofy risk is one that you really, is where you take a risk that you really can't afford to lose. And we probably want to stay away from those. The other extreme is to take no risks at all. This second way of being is much more prevalent in our culture. Being an optimist involves taking risks. And my advice is to take risks by the spoonful, measured, not so much risks that you can't afford to lose. But what could be riskier than falling in love? One will not fall in love unless one is willing to make an emotional commitment that has the capacity to wound. Risk is a necessary ingredient in every successful life because risks put you in a position to win. Parenting, mothering, fathering, what could be riskier? I believe that in order to be a realistic optimist, you have to be ready to pay a certain amount of rent in disappointment to maintain your optimism. But it is worth the price. Feel a sense of purpose. Choose what you want for your goals and commit to them. Being wholeheartedly dedicated to doing something comes fully equipped with an ineffable force. Wonderful things start happening when we commit ourselves to doing whatever it takes to reach some goal. And when you're fully committed to doing something, decision-making about other things becomes easier. When you have a goal to balance that decision-making. Is this going to help me get to my goal? Is it going to push my goal further away? If it pushes my goal further away, do I really want to do it anyway? And finally, live in the moment. My friend and colleague Patrick O'Neill tells of an experience he had as a child. It seems that while walking home alone from school one winter day, he was set upon and beaten up by some older bullies and left lying in the snow. A neighbor woman with a foreign accent took him into her home and gave young Patrick some hot cocoa. Seeing the rage in his eyes, she said gently to him, You are angry at those boys. It is natural for you to feel that way, given what happened. But now, let it go. This day has other things for you. He later learned that the woman and her husband were both survivors of a concentration camp during World War II. When he happened to notice a tattoo on the woman's forearm, it was, of course, her identification number from the prison camp. And when Patrick innocently asked about the tattoo, the woman gently replied that the number represented her past, not her present, and it was not going to be her future. Patrick goes on to say, imagine hearing that from a death camp survivor. Besides the hurts and indignities of an unfair universe, this day has other things to give you. Beside the anger and the hurts that you want to carry in your heart, this day has other things to give you. I heard that from someone who knew a thing or two about pain and anger and being a victim. So again, the advice from folks who spend $500 million a year on research. Devote time to family and friends. Appreciate what you have. Maintain an optimistic outlook. Feel a sense of purpose. Live in the moment. What will you do, asks the poet Mary Oliver, with your one wild and precious life? This day has many things to offer you.